And now I'd like to introduce our main speaker for the evening. He drove all the way from Dana Point, Duke F. Welcome.
Hi, my name is Duke. I'm alcoholic. And I remember the first time that I spoke at an AA meeting. I had maybe a year sober, and I was really nervous, and I didn't know what to say. And I asked my sponsor about speaking at an AA meeting, and he said, we don't speak at an AA meeting to act like you're, you know, have a lot of recovery or you're super spiritual or say the perfect thing. He says, the reason why you speak at an AA meeting is to get chicks. So, yeah, he was definitely a good sponsor, and it worked for me. Yeah, it worked for me. Sorry, ladies or men. All right. I met my wife at a meeting. Before AA, without alcohol, without the steps, I'm a naturally uncomfortable person, just uncomfortable in my skin and awkward, and I spend a lot of time in my head. I do a lot of thinking. A lot of my thinking, most of my thinking is about what you're thinking. Then I start thinking about what you're thinking, I'm thinking. And then I start getting mad at you. Because I can't believe that you think that I think that, because I don't think that, so screw you. We might be at a party right now, but don't even talk to me. So, yeah, I'm an uncomfortable person. I like to compare myself to other people and see how that makes me feel. Not good. Yeah, I love comparing, you know, myself to, like, I love meeting someone who graduated high school with me, only now he insists that I call him doctor. I remember in high school, I met one of those girls that was like, have you ever had a relationship where it just seemed like it was meant to be, the stars aligned, and the God said, this is the one for you. And I went out with the girl of my dreams she went out with me for 3 months, and I went out with her for 5 years. So, yeah, it's difficult going out with someone who's not going out with you. That was definitely one of our big issues. So yeah, like I said, I'm an uncomfortable person, and I need fast-acting pain relief. And for me, that comes in the form of Keystone Light, bottled taste in a can. So, yeah, alcohol just made me feel normal, just made me feel like I could talk to people. Yeah, it just made me feel regular, and I loved it. I love alcohol. It's the best thing ever. And to me, alcohol is not the problem. For me, alcohol was the solution. I was the problem, and alcohol worked for me. It made me feel great. And just unfortunately, there came a day when alcohol was no longer wacky, crazy, or zany. And that's when you end up in AA. The judge tells you to go. So when I was 19, I got my first DUI. And the court said that I had to go to a bunch of AA meetings in a certain amount of time. And I remember I went to one, and It was really gross, and it was just a bunch of old, like, biker people, and I'm, like, 19, and I just was like, oh, this is awful. And then so I didn't go to any more, but then, like, that court date was coming up, and I was getting really nervous, and so what I did was I just threw a party at my house and passed the court card around, and everyone signed it, and that worked for me, so... I've noticed that AA doesn't really AA isn't good if you don't want to be here. It doesn't work well if you don't want to be here. AA just works, you know, if you're really gonna do the work. So my when I was 21, I got my second DUI, and by then, and also my dad had died of alcoholism when I was 12. And when he was alive, he said, you know, when I die, I don't want people to be sad. I want people to have a party. So, like, all of his friends got a yacht and a bunch of alcohol. And that was, like, the first time I got drunk when I was 12. But I just saw, like, the path that my dad was going on. I was on my second DUI. And it seemed like I was headed down the path that my dad was headed on. And all these things were happening that was just making me hit a bottom. And the girl of my dreams wanted nothing to do with me. And I don't know. I was also, after my second DUI, I was continuing to drink, but I was telling all my friends how I was going to get sober. And most friends that are drinking don't want to hear how you're going to do the steps and get a sponsor. They're like, can't we just drink together? And but I remember I told so many people that I was going to get sober, and I care so much about what other people think that, you know, I made the decision to get sober, like, at Thanksgiving, but I remember I said right after the holidays. And so, yeah, I just drank through the holidays, telling all my friends I'm going to, you know, get sober and get a sponsor and do all the steps. And, yeah, and I remember I was supposed to do it January 1st. My sobriety date is January 9th. And, I finally sat down the drink, and I had all these plans of going to meetings and getting sponsors, because I had gone to AA. But I wasn't going to get sober just because of the court. I wanted to do it after the court stuff was over on my own. And so the first day I got sober, I also, I didn't have a license because of the DUI. So I was like, oh, well, I don't have a license. I can't go to a meeting. Second day, same thing. Third day, I quit smoking cigarettes. And I was like, oh, everyone at AA smokes, so I should probably avoid them for a little bit longer. And then, like, I was staying sober, but I wasn't going to AA or doing any of the AA stuff. And I was just hanging out with my old drinking friends and going to parties. But I was drinking Snapple out of a brown paper bag. And hanging out with drinking people isn't as fun when you're not drinking. I don't know if you guys noticed that, but... yeah, drinking parties aren't that much fun, especially when the guy's saying the same thing that he said like three other times, only this time he's like spitting on you. And so I stayed sober for 90 days without going to any AA. And I'm going to backtrack for just a second. When I was in eighth grade, there was a guy across the street, down the street, that used to sell us pot. He was, like, in high school. And I just always remember going over there. It was one of those, like, latchkey kids. I was a latchkey kid, too. But for some reason, he was a latchkey kid that could sell marijuana and smoke in his house. And so I hung out there all the time. And but I just remember this guy, like, through the years, like, in high school, just always seeing this guy, like, just always wasted. He was just a few years older than me. One time in high school, we all went out into the Ortegas, like a place to go camping, and we just went out there to do LSD and have fun. And I brought my cooler, and I remember someone brought an axe to chop wood, And I remember this guy that used to sell me pot was walking around with this axe on too much acid. And there was like an evil in his eye. And he was just like walking around, like mumbling to himself. And I remember hearing him go, "I'm going to kill somebody." And I was just like, "Dude, I just want to trip out on the fire." And he eventually killed my cooler. And that's when I got out of there. If you go out, don't mix LSD and axes. So cut to me 90 days sober. And I was 90 days sober. I was in a band, too. And I remember I was 90 days sober. I was with this guy. This is my friend, David. And I was 90 days sober. He was the drummer in my band. And I remember we were about to go into a club. And I was telling him, "Oh, you know what? I think I was taking that whole sobriety thing. I was being a little bit dramatic. You know, like, I've been sober 90 days. I might start drinking again." I remember he said, he was like, "Duke, after 90 days, like, you're doing so well, like, you look better, and you're writing so many new songs," and like, he was like, "You're my only hope that anybody can stay sober." And just that alone, a non-sober friend just seeing a change in me. I hadn't even gone to AA yet. Just by setting the drink down alone, like, all these differences for the better had happened. So I didn't drink that night. The very next day, that guy that killed my cooler at the campground calls me up, and he says, "Hey, Duke, I hear you're looking for work." And he worked construction. So I started working with him. Turns out he's 2 years sober. And I started going to work with him. He started giving me work. And he would drive me home. And then he said, "Hey, do you want to go to meetings with me?" So he started taking me to meetings. And I remember when he would drop me off, I just remember him talking to me. And I remember looking in his eyes. And there's like a look in people's eyes in AA that it's like a look of, I don't know, it was like a look of love that you see in people's eyes. And I distinctly remember the evil look of the axe guy. And I was like, if someone can have that dramatic of a change, then this thing has got to work. There's got to be something to it. So I started going to meetings with him. And he started introducing me to people. When I got sober, I was 21 years old. I'm 44 years old now. And my first whole year, it was like, I felt like I was young. I was like, well, I wasn't that bad of an alcoholic. That's how I felt. My first whole year was like, a lot of it was trying to get my life back on track. I felt like I was behind schedule and I just needed to catch up. I don't know if you guys, any of you guys feel behind schedule, but that's how I felt. And I was like, I got to go back to college and I got to get the girl back, and I got to get the band back together. And it was all about this outside stuff that I have to do. And because I felt that I wasn't that bad of an alcoholic, that meant that I was allowed to come to meetings, you know, a little bit late. And I was allowed to, like, just sit in the back and not raise my hand at any meetings, and then just, like, leave right after. And that's basically what I did. And I just focused on, like, getting my life back on track. And the thing is I after a year of sobriety, I had all these plans. I'm going to move up to San Francisco. I'm going to get the band to follow me, and I'm going to get the girl back, and like, all this is going to be great. So I had a year sober, barely did like half a four-step, maybe, I don't know, hardly anything. I was just doing this program half-assed, basically. And I move up to San Francisco. I got some roommates, I got into school, and basically after a few months, I was just kind of hitting some meetings here and there, but after a few months, like, just everything in my life started crumbling. Like, I was just, like, failing in school, my roommates weren't doing their dishes, it was like they never heard of a sponge, the girl of my dreams was going out with her boyfriend, which wasn't me, And I remember I started having these crazy panic attacks, thought I was having a heart attack. I checked myself into the emergency room in the hospital. And this is a year sober. I'm getting wheeled on the gurney in the hospital thinking that I'm having a heart attack. And I'm just like, dude, I'm a year sober. And I'm way more messed up than I was when I first got sober. And what's going on? And it was at that point where I said, I don't care anymore. I don't care about the band. I don't care about the girl. I don't care about the shirt on my back. Though the one thing that I haven't tried is AA, the same, just 100%, full force. I knew that in my heart that I hadn't tried AA full force. And I knew that I knew that was the right decision. And it was at that point that the universe just passionately rearranged itself to show me what to do next. And I went to an AA meeting, and I got a sponsor, one of those guys that has nothing better to do than go to AA. And I started doing, like, he was like, yeah, AA was his life. And I started doing everything that he told me. He said, if you want what I have, do what I do. And he started giving me these suggestions. And he said, arrive to a meeting 15 minutes early, stay 15 minutes later. He said, go to the same meetings each week. He said, sit in the front row because that's the intensive care unit and you're a sick alcoholic. And he told me, and I never raised my hand at meetings at all. I remember my first year of sobriety, I would be during the breaks like we just had, I would be hanging out with my back against the wall just in my head thinking, why is no one talking to me right now? And I remember thinking, if I were them, I'd totally be talking to me. And and my sponsor told me, he said, raise your hand at every meeting, even if you don't know what to say. He said, stay shy and die. So I started going to these meetings, and I started raising my hand at every meeting. Even if I just said, hey, my name's Duke, I'm alcoholic, my sponsor told me to raise my hand, and then that's it. And after doing that for just a short period of time, a weird thing started to happen. People started talking to me like they knew me. They're like, oh, hey, Duke, what's going on? Just from raising my hand in a meeting. And I started feeling a part of AA. And my sponsor told me, if you want to feel a part of AA, you got to be a part of AA. And he said, if you want a friend in AA, then you got to be a friend. And then told me to get commitments, told me to get a greeter commitment. He said, that's like one of the best commitments. Just put your hand out there. And that's how I learned, like, a lot of my social skills in real life in AA, you know? Like, I can go in real life and just be like, hi, my name's Duke, how are you? And that's something I learned as a greeter. So my sponsor told me to get a notebook. He said get a notebook to work the steps, but also to write stuff down. He told me to bring it to meetings. He said, listen in the meeting, and every time you hear something good, write it down in your notebook, because you're only going to remember what you remember, and you're going to forget the rest of it. So he said, write it down. Write down all this good stuff. And so I have, like, just notebooks and notebooks of stuff. I remember in the beginning, I was like, how come no one else has a notebook? And so I just did what he told me to do, and I started writing stuff down. And he said that he told me to write a few suggestions in the notebook first. These are the first suggestions that my sponsor told me to write in my notebook. He said, number one, you're not going to get what you want. It's not going to go your way, and it's not fair. He said, once we get that out of the way, we'll get along a lot better. So he told me that the steps aren't about getting what you want. It's about learning how to love the way that it's actually going. And it's about learning how to love the way your circumstances are right now and accept them. And he started taking me through the steps. And the first step for me, you just do the short version of the first step is just my way is not working. And we do the first step when we're out there. All of our years drinking and getting wasted and getting arrested and doing stupid stuff and spending more money than we have. All that stuff is powerlessness and unmanageability. And the second step, the short version, is there's got to be another way. And to me, just coming to AA, you're trying another way other than your own. And just coming to this meeting right now, you're doing the second step. And then the third step is I'll try your way. And to me, the third step isn't about turning our will and our life over to the care of God. It says that we made a decision. Just because you decide to do something doesn't mean that you do it. Just because I decide to go hike up a mountain doesn't mean I'm on top of the mountain. It just means that I made a decision. I haven't gone to the store and bought my hiking boots and water bottle and actually drove there and done the work. No, I just made a decision. And the third step is only a decision to work the rest of the steps. And the way you really work the third step is by doing the rest of the steps. And the fourth step, like my sponsor actually just wrote with me. Like I just brought, my sponsor was into top 10 lists. He's all, just give me your top 10 resentments, the biggest ones. He said, when you're starting the fourth step, think of it like your parents went out of town, and you had a big kegger party at your house, and the place is trash, and it's Sunday, and your parents are going to come home, and you got to clean it up. Well, the first thing you're going to do is get a hefty bag and just start putting all the big stuff in there first. That's what we do with the fourth step. Just let's get the big stuff in there first. So I put the top 10, and I started learning that some of the things that I learned about me is that I was afraid that I was less than other people, and I was afraid that it wasn't going to work out. I wasn't trusting that things would work out. And I learned that having a resentment is like taking poison and expecting the other person to get hurt. It only hurts me. And so, we did a fifth step together, and then the sixth and seventh steps are about humility. And my sponsor told me that humility isn't being greater than anyone, but it also isn't being less than anyone. It's being equal to. He said, for you, that's a pretty good deal because you're only better than like seven people and less than everyone else. So so he said humility is a pretty good deal for you. And he also gave me an analogy. He said, like, imagine like you had like an old classic car, like a Mustang 64 and a half, and you've just like, you've just beat it up and you were just like fixing it yourself, but you don't know what you're doing. And, you know, there's duct tape on it. And he's all, it's not about souping up the car, but it's just about bringing the car back to stock condition. So it's not like I'm going to be super Duke or anything like that. I get to be just regular Duke. That's another thing. Like I wanted to be like James Bond Duke, you know, like I was afraid that just regular Duke wasn't good enough. And in the sixth and seventh step, that's one of the things that I learned, is that regular Duke is pretty cool. So in the eighth step, that's when we made a list to all the people that we had harmed. And the way my sponsor told me to do it was, he said, imagine that you're on a bus. And he said, think of everyone in your life and imagine them getting on the bus. And if you're like, oh, no, not that person, you're like hiding behind the newspaper or something, then that person goes on your list. And he said, because the ninth step, the making the amends isn't saying I'm sorry necessarily. To amend something is to make it right, to do something to actually make it right. And one of the things that I learned is that the ninth step is about freedom. And it's about being able to walk down the street and not have to run to the other side like, oh, no, that guy's here. Being able to, like, look everyone in the eye and made all those relationships right. It's being able to walk down the street a free man. And then the 10th step is to just continue. That's like a daily continuance, you know, like if you cut someone off surfing. Sorry, bro. then the 11th step is meditation and improving our conscious contact with God. And I've had all kinds of different relationships with the 11th step. And I feel like There's, you know, anybody can go, you can go a million different ways, whatever is cool for you. But I, one thing that I did was I went up to San Francisco, Marin County. They have this meditation retreat center called Spirit Rock, and they have these silent retreats where I went to a 7-day one where you don't talk, write, no phone, no nothing for 7 days, just silence. And I'm married with 2 kids, so I was really stoked. but, you know, like the first day is like, oh my God, this is awesome. But then like by the second day, your head starts to, you know, get a little chattier, and then by the third day you're like going, what the hell did I do? This is crazy. This is stupid. And I remember like they make everyone do chores so the price could be cheaper, and I had to clean bathrooms. And some people, like, if you're only supposed to do this if the other person wants to, but like if you walk up to someone and they acknowledge you, you're allowed to like bow to them or something. But if they don't want to, you're not supposed to. And I remember I was cleaning the bathrooms, and there was some guy like coming into my bathroom that I'm cleaning, and he was like trying to use it and trying to give me a little bow. And I remember like going, "Screw you," you know, like in my head, like just being so mad at this guy who's trying to give me a bow. And I just really learned how messed up my brain was. But then like come like day 4, 5, 6, 7, like my brain was just like, whoa. And then it just like quieted. And then on like day 8, when I was in the Oakland airport, it was like I was back on acid. I could hear every single conversation in the airport. And it was crazy. And it was like now it's when I meditate, and you don't even have to meditate, just remind yourself to just be present. To me, just reminding myself to be present is a tool that we can have. We don't have to spend, you know, just a lot of times I catch myself in my head. I think for me, resentments are about movies. It's resentment means to relive and to like play these movies in our head. And a lot of times I catch myself playing these movies in my head, and you feel myself getting uncomfortable. But throughout the day, we can just remind ourselves like, oh, I don't have to watch that movie. I can just like actually be present right now. And I think that that's a huge thing. And then the 12th step, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps and sponsoring people. I remember I was really scared to sponsor people when I got to the 12th step. But my sponsor told me, he said, learning to sponsor someone is kind of like learning to make pancakes. You got to figure you're going to burn the first few. So just go for it. And also I remember, I just went for it. I also learned here in AA, this is some of the tools that I've changed my whole perspective. Like when I first came to AA, it was all about alcohol. And I've realized that AA isn't even about alcohol at all. AA is what happens when you're done with the alcohol. And how do you live when there's no alcohol? And I remember when I first came to AA, I was just concentrating on, I hope I don't drink today, just walking away from the drink, but just thinking about, like, why does he get a drink? And it was just all about alcohol. And then after doing the 4th and 5th step, it was like I did 180 degrees turn. Instead of walking away from the drink, it was like I'm walking towards the solution or towards the mountain or whatever you want to call it. And it's just given me a whole perspective change. And I have a bunch of different perspective changes. Like maybe nothing happens in God's world by mistake. And I used to be really concerned with the truth. I just wanted to know the truth. Like, what is the truth? Is Jesus the truth, or is Buddha the truth? And my sponsor was just like, you're never going to know the truth, you know? He said, for some people, like, maybe the truth is God is everything from the clouds up and from the clouds down is just all man and me or whatever. Or maybe, like, God is the big decisions, but I'm the little decisions. And he's like, you know, you're never going to know. Pick what's most comfortable. So for me, it's like, what if just God is everything? And of my father... of myself I have nothing, the Father doeth the works. And to me, if it's all God, then that means that I don't get to take credit. I don't get to take credit for my accomplishments, but it also means that it takes away any of the shame and the blame, and that's huge for me because I spent a lot of time in that shame and the blame place. I remember for my ninth step, my sponsor was like he was telling me, like, it's not about saying sorry. He's like, I want you to show up at this person's house with a sponge saying, I'll clean your bathroom. And so he had me do a bunch of crazy stuff like that. And that girl that I was going out with that wasn't going out with me, I was like pretending to be her friend and like super scared to tell her like how I felt. So my sponsor like made me write a letter to tell her like, I love you and this is how I've always felt. And he like made me send it, and it was super scary. And I did. That was part of my ninth step. And then she contacted me back and said, yeah, I have a boyfriend. So my sponsor, I remember he told me one day, he was like, I don't like the way that you're dressing. So he came over to my house, and he brought some hefty trash bags, and he said, we're going to go through your closet, and I'm going to go through each article of clothing, and I'll put it in front of you, and if you say maybe, like, he'll say, do you like this, Duke? And if I say maybe, then we throw it out. Or if I say, I don't know, we throw it out. But if I say, fuck yeah, I love that shirt, then we're keeping it. So we went through all my clothing in my closet. He'd be like, do you like these pants? I'm like, oh, I don't know, throw it out. Do you like these? Maybe. Goodbye. And do you like this? Pants. Fuck yeah, I love those. So we keep those. And the thing that I learned is that nature abhors a vacuum. What that means is that when there's a space, nature wants to fill that space. But the thing is if there's no space there, there's nothing for nature to fill it with. And in my closet, I have to get rid of the maybes and the I don't knows to make room for the fuck yeahs. And if my life is filled with maybes and I don't knows, there's no room for fuck yeahs in my life. And that girl that was going out with someone else was kind of a maybe or I don't know, to be honest. And so I was like, I'm going to take this into my love life. So I started, you know, after I broke up with the girl that wasn't going out with me, I started, you know, going up to girls like, hey, so are you my girlfriend? And you know, I would get like, I don't really know you. And I'd be like, oh, I'm going to take that as an I don't know. Goodbye. So, until finally I met the girl. I was a musician and a songwriter, and someone at one of my meetings was in a band. He was in an AA band called the Blackouts. There's probably a million AA bands called the Blackouts. The last meeting I spoke at, there was like the Blackouts were in the crowd. So, but this guy was in the Blackouts, and he said, "Hey, we're doing this long gig, and we're getting people to play songs with us so we could fill out the time. Will you come play some songs with us?" So I went to the Blackouts band practice, and all of a sudden there was this hot blonde singing backup. And I you know, immediately fell in love. And I was a little bit shy, but luckily she stalked me. And I finally got her phone number. It was the time when that movie Swingers came out, and they said 7 days is money. So I waited 7 days and I called her, and that worked. We've been married. We've been together for 20 years, and we have two kids. My first kid learned how to clap from coming to AA, and so we moved from San Francisco to Southern California, and I don't know if any of you guys have moved in sobriety, but moving is like, it's like being a newcomer all over again with none of the attention. And and so, but the thing is I had all these tools that I got to use again. And I just went to meetings. I went to the same meetings every day. I sat in front and I raised my hand at every meeting. And all next thing you know, everyone knew me again. They're like, oh, hey, Duke, what's going on? And then takes about, I don't know. And I mean, right away, like people are starting to talk to you. And I don't know. I felt like after a year, you're just, this is where I live now and I'm comfortable here. I remember before I got married, me and my sponsor, we wanted to start a fun young people's meeting in sobriety. And it was on a Friday night, and we wanted the speaker to talk about relationships in sobriety, because I heard that a lot of people drink over either finance or romance. And my sponsor was like, yeah, we're probably never going to have the finance part, so let's just focus on the romance. So we started this young people's meeting, and it was kind of a dud at first. And we would tell the speakers, speak on relationships and sobriety. And so the speaker would just do his regular AA talk. And he wouldn't talk about relationships at all. And we're like, what the hell? So me and my sponsor would start conferring with each other. How can we force these people to talk about relationships and sobriety? And then we said, what if we interviewed him? And then we're like, yeah, it'll be like a David Letterman show. And then we're like, yeah, we'll have a sidekick. We'll have a top 10. And then so we started a talk show format meeting. And it was a lot of fun, and it's still going to this day. I started it up when I moved down here, and one of the things that I've learned is that you can find, no matter what type of person you are, you can find those types of people in AA. If you want to be rigid and super uptight, we have those meetings for you. If you want to be a young and crazy and stupid, we have those meetings, you know. If you want to be all men around you, we have that. So we have everything. AA is the universal wrench. It fits all nuts. And I've learned that over time, AA can just adapt. It adapts with you, you know, because you're probably going to be changing. And so AA will eventually adapt with you. And I heard that getting in a relationship in sobriety is like pouring Miracle-Gro on your character defects, and that's been true. That's been true. I've got to find out what my character defects are and my wife's. But the thing is that you get in a romantic relationship. I hope that you have worked the steps, because if you have, then you have the opportunity to grow even more, because all your stuff is going to come up, all your major issues. You have a chance to look at them and grow through them, grow or go, or co, but choose grow or go. You don't want to just be codependent and awful. So AA has given me a wonderful life. I even got an opportunity to follow my dreams in life. I a lot of times you hear, you know, people in AA, like, they say, like, because I had trouble with working. I'm not like a work person, more of a vacation person. And you know, you hear a lot of people in AA, like, you know, you got to get a job. And I'm like, but I don't like my job. And they're like, it's called work, you go. And so, like, I kind of went down the wrong path for like 10 years, like going into finance, and I hated it so bad. So like when this last financial collapse came, I was like, I am never going to work in that industry again. And I was like, this is like 2007. I'm like, I'm going to do just YouTube and replace Conan O'Brien and be a talk show person. And I threw my life, I know this sounds crazy, but I actually did this. I threw my life into starting a talk show out of my bedroom, and no one watched it. And I had all these dreams. Like, I seriously, like, okay, sometimes in AA we might seem a little crazy. And I went through bankruptcy, foreclosure, repossession. Sometimes wives get mad at that kind of stuff. But the weird thing is I got this camera. I was like, I'm going to make a movie. And so I wanted to test out, my wife's a yoga teacher, and I'm like, I want to test out the camera to make a movie. So I filmed her doing yoga. I put it up on the internet, forgot about doing my comedy stuff. Next thing you know, like, the yoga video has like a million hits and a bunch of subscribers. And like, oh my God, like, no one wants to watch my comedy, but everyone wants to watch this yoga. And next thing you know, like, I focused on the yoga thing. And now I make a living on YouTube, me and my wife, doing yoga. I'm living the millennial dream. We traveled to Europe, and this summer we're going to go to Morocco and Greece and Amsterdam, like, to meet with all these yoga people that are from the internet. And it was all because I'm not a work person. And I think the point of that story isn't to quit your job and go through bankruptcy. Please don't do that, because it's very awful. But what I think is that AA isn't about becoming what someone else in this room tells you you need to become. AA is about being true to yourself and finding out who you actually are. And that's the biggest lesson that I've learned in AA is, you know, maybe go follow your dreams or follow who you really are. And it might not work out the way that you want to, but maybe something else will work out that you had never even thought of. At least that was my experience. So as a result of this program, I've been given a life. I've had a spiritual awakening, and thanks for letting me share.